And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 208. I'm your host, Silas Lindenstein, and this is the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Welcome. Welcome to you. Thank you for tuning in. This is a pretty cool episode because I don't just have one guest. I don't just have two guests. I've got like four or five guests on this show. I got to interview, I sat down with the cast of a South African caper heist comedy film called The Umbrella Men. It was selected for the Toronto International Film Festival and it just debuted there a few days ago. And I got the writer, director, John Barker, and some of the talent, Jacques Da Silva, Shamila Miller, a bunch of other very talented actors. This is a funny film. Let me tell you that. It's a heist movie. It's sort of in that Ocean's 11 realm, but a little more. And there's some South African history involved in it that is so fascinating. Things that we don't know about as, like, for my American audience, that we don't know about. For you others, you've probably learned more because you've got a better educational system. But for me and a bunch of us, this is a lot of new info. And yeah, it's very fascinating, and it's just a fun film, and it's a different light that you get to see South African, especially Black South Africans in. It's a comedy. There's romance. There's everything. It's not about apartheid, right? That's where I feel like that's what we end up with a lot. In America, we have to have the torture films representing Black experiences from all over the world. But there's comedies. There's comedies and there's romances everywhere. And we need more of that. We need more of that here. So that's my soapbox. So I sat down and interviewed. They're doing press days at it's called TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival 2022. Sorry. A little time travel there. So, yeah, I sat down, talked to them, asked them questions, and only one of the seven questions I asked is what they're most nerdy about, because there was too many. That would take 50 minutes to do all my questions. So that's what I got there. So we had lots of fun, lots of laughs, lots of jokes, lots of jokey jokes on this one. So, yeah, appreciate it. Anyhow, here we go. This interview, but first, I want to thank my Patreon supporters. Big shout out to my Inner Circle members, Tara Widener, Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel. If you want to help support this podcast for as little as $1 a month, you can go to patreon.com/blackandahalf and become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month, which is really the amount of entertainment you're getting for $1. I mean, I think it's astronomical. It helps support this show and my new show that I forget if I announced, but the film only podcast, the film and TV only podcast, You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein, that is now going to be a sister show running under the Black and a Half umbrella. I mean, that's where all the movie reviews are going to be from now on. And maybe some interviews. I'm not sure. Maybe you're listening to an interview with Silas Lindenstein. I don't know. That's going to be over there on that feed. This is probably going to be simultaneously published on both feeds. I don't know. I'll have to do a different intro. I don't know. But you supporting this show, Black and a Half, supports other podcasts. It supports films. It supports, I don't know, books. Who knows? We can reach for the stars together, people. If we get enough support, who knows what we could do? So go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. Support this show or become an Inner Circle member like the three I mentioned earlier. Let's see. What else? You can also, you can go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, it's called now. Rate us 5 stars, of course. And, of course, you can always go support my third one, You're You're buying a home with Seidel Sendenstein, where I educate and empower home buyers all over the nation on the best methods to buy a home. You can listen to that wherever you listen to podcasts or yourbuyingahome.com. But that's those podcasts. And this is this one. So right now, I just want you to open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to Black and a Half, episode number 208. The cast of The Umbrella Men.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
How's the Toronto Film Festival? How's it going?
It's been extraordinary. There's such a lovely, it's so great to see audiences in a theater. It's like, with all the streaming stuff, it's great so that everyone has access to so much, but to be in a theater with an audience, to see the queues, to see the people, this is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Was there... I get curious in watching comedies from other countries. Now, this podcast, Black and a Half, it's the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, Washington, probably, right? So I talk about comedy a lot and with comedians and comic writers, and I find the idea of international comedy fascinating about, because I'm like, I was like, I found some moments in this film absolutely hysterical, particularly the, not the pawn shop, but the, when he goes to get the money, the bartering with the guy, hilarious actor there. And I was curious, like watching this film, I'm like, I wonder how many jokes are in this film that I have no clue. Are cultural references to the area or just, you know, language jokes. And I'm not... Is the film, I don't know if my link was just subtitled or if the whole, is the film out in
the whole subtitled? Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I was wondering, cause I was like, cause I'm listening and I'm like, that's English. That's not, wait, what is, I'm like, okay, I'm American. So I'm very ignorant. First of all. Okay. Hold on. I know most of my international, cultural understandings from movies, right? I don't know the real. So, I mean, I sort of knew that there's like is it Afrikaan? What is this?
It's Afrikaans. Yeah, it's actually Afrikaans.
Okay.
It's actually another dialect from Afrikaans.
Okay. And so I was like, the play on word, I was like, because I know when I watch British films, they do some puns that I just don't even get because they use the wrong words. I don't know, you know. So I was like, how much... Did you get to see a screening of this in a South African audience?
Yeah. Okay. So we had our premieres and it's also been available for South African audiences for about 2 months now.
Yeah.
And it's great. The response has been good. I mean, what's interesting is that it's this particular community is not, there's not often like positive stories about the Cape Coloured, how is the politically correct term?
Cape Malay.
The Malays. Just because there's a lot of stereotype and a lot of gangster, criminal, thug stories, usually. And that's often how we're represented. So to be able to represent this part of the culture, the nuance, the detail, the
recording
family.
Recording in progress.
Sorry, I need to start your recording.
was cool and was also educational and informative for the different cultural groups within South Africa. I had a couple of people who saw it and was like, I had never seen this side of South Africa before, which is awesome.
Which is very different because in America, our representation of Black people is always excellent. So, yeah, so, no problems here.
Not relate.
Did you find differences with the Toronto audience, like as far as the jokes that they would get? Would it be very different, or was it a very, you know, sometimes comedy is just written in like a way that you know you're supposed to laugh even if you don't get the joke?
Actually, it was quite a nice reception, because they you could feel that they enjoyed the movie, and you could hear that they got the comedy, which I think we were a little bit nervous about, because the movie is so culturally specific that you don't know if it's going to translate to an international audience, and it did.
Well, that's great.
And they loved it. Yeah, the response has been phenomenal.
I was surprised. There were two moments that the two biggest laughs we got, I think, were the one reference to Deliverance, when Cope said, yeah, the banjo spins Deliverance, and then Jerome and Mortimer look at each other like they're going, what the fuck is this guy talking about? And then the other one was El Moriarty too, in the pawn shop. Those got really big laughs. Mm-hmm. The comic timing on that was great. It was very good.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed the film, and I didn't know what to expect coming in. So thank you so much for. There is a particular shot I wanted to talk about that I just loved. I was talking to my podcast partner before I came out here about this. There was a shot where your two leads here, that they're at the door and they're like about to kiss, right? And you cut them off at the eyes. And my first thought as a budding director I'm like, what's he doing? And then I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I just love the choice of not showing their eyes. It drew in this intimacy to it that I wasn't expecting. And I was like, well, this is why it's at a festival, because he's taking these bold shots. Like, I feel like I see so many movies that you don't see. I don't see a lot of like new shots. You know, like, I always see the same kind of shots, maybe something different with a cool thing.
Thank you.
But that moment, I've told at least three people about that scene in the last, like, last 12 hours, because I was like, that was so exciting to watch happen. And was that an accident, or was that?
No, It was storyboard. We wanted to make it a special kiss. We didn't want them just to have a kiss there. And the idea was that they would be. What makes it so intimate is that they keep talking to each other.
Mm. Yeah.
And we didn't put. It was so that they're about to leave. You can see all the emotions expressed in their lips. They're so close together. And then we don't take ourselves too seriously by then saving the scene and not getting like too like, oh my God, these guys are so like arty. Well, when he says he's got a secret, and then she says, I've got a secret. And he says, what, a Victoria's Secret? And then everyone laughs. And then it's like, it's so beautiful. But we also pull the music out. So in that scene, when they first arrive back from the restaurant, they're standing in the door and there's music playing, there's jazz music. And in edit, we kill the music. And all you hear is the city. You hear a siren in the back, which you put in post. And you just have these two kissing. It's like, I'm so glad you love that, because it's beautiful. And we crafted it. And a lot of credit has to go to Matteo, because Matteo Moeng, who's a cinematographer, I had it in a storyboard. If I showed you the storyboard, you'd probably go, Jesus, how did they come up with that shit? Like a stick figure, you know, like this.
Yeah.
But so Matteo lit it beautifully. And then we had this fantastic light. Him again, one of the lights in the apartment, because he's so brilliant at handheld. He's fantastic. He's so talented. He moved around that shot to get that light. So if you watch it again, that light's right in the middle of their lips, and he just holds on that for a while. So it's amazing.
I wish I had this video, that like the shot of us kissing in high school. Just be like, this is what I can do, bro.
No, it's because you can see that. Yeah.
No, it was sexy.
It's very sexy.
Even we were in the studio, I think we were doing like ADR for another scene, and John called us in, and he was like, oh, do you want to see your guys' like first kissing? We're like, okay, cool, that's cool. And he took us into the studio and he showed it to us, and we were watching for the first time together, and we were literally like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like we didn't even know. I was like, I didn't realize, I didn't obviously see the vision of the full of the scene, and how they were going to put it together and capture it. But I was like, what? Guys?
All right.
Very impressed with it. Yeah.
And I do film stuff, so I know how close you had to have been to do that. Right. You were like, You're practically closer to each other than if you were actually kissing, I think, in order to pull that off. Like,
camera was also right there with us.
I do think that that is one of... I feel like that is one of those moments in cinema that the average person is not going to realize how hard it is to technically even pull that off. Both the intimacy of it and how much it, and that the camera, you know, right in the camera in your face, all of it going on is like, it's actually so hard to capture a moment like this. And you did. And I was like, oh, this is that. I think from that moment on, I was totally sold on the film. I was like, oh, I like, what else are they going to do? This is great.
Thank you. And I appreciate it. That's very cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
So John, was it based on a true story? What is this? You guys got money anywhere?
No, not based on a true story at all, actually. Just
a John Barker original.
I don't know how it turned out so wonderful. I'm not that clever. But it was just about, actually, there was a documentary, if I can go back quite far, about the Minstrels, which was made by a guy called Lloyd Ross, I think. Is it Lloyd Ross? The famous documentary guy, Cape Town guy, yeah, Lloyd Ross. And he made a documentary about the festival. And in the documentary, it shows how the rivalry between the minstrel troops, and that the owners of each troop will go to the other troops and steal or headhunt and pay for musicians to come and play at that time in their troop. And it created huge antagonism between the troops. And I guess it was taking that and then just building it into a fictitious place and loving jazz and wanting to be based in the Boer Kaap. It just formulated in that way, very organic.
That was the inspiration for the whole film, that this.
I go back into the history of my dad. My dad was quite a big anti-apartheid activist. And so he took us to District 6 when it was being torn down, this beautiful suburb, old Bohemian suburb in Cape Town that had many different cultures living in it, and the apartheid government hated it, so they bulldozed it. And we got to see that, how terrible that looked at that time. So I always wanted to do something about District 6. That's why the animation is in the film, because that suburb is no longer there. And I guess I went to see the Minstrels play really young, and I love Minstrels. I love their music and the culture and the comedy, and it's beautiful and vibrant, and why not make a film about it? And it's so undershot. There's no one ever shoots this community in this way, and they're just so beautiful and rich, and yeah, it was so much fun. I like...
So they call it minstrels there?
Klopsa. Yeah. Well, actually, they don't like minstrels. The actual minstrels don't like... I think it's more of an international way of telling what the tails and hats and blackface is. But it's more called Klopsa in the local language. It's Klopsa.
Yeah.
Okay. They kind of sound like minstrels. I don't know. It's been Klopsa.
Well, I grew up in knowing it as the Coon Carnival.
Yeah, you can't even say
it. And you can't say it. So you, like, growing up, it was called the Coon Carnival, and you can't say that.
No.
I can't say that anymore. For a long time.
You can say
that. My entire like childhood and upbringing, that's what my dad has always been like, on the 2nd of January, we're going to the Coon Carnival. And then only as an adult, only recently, like, the last decade or so, like, or even less, it's like, oh no, you can't say that word. And we're like, oh, but that's I had to learn that it was the minstrel carnival, or, you know, you can say the cops are cops there, but...
I'm already going to have to explain that term to my daughter when she listens to this, because that's so, like, here, that's so, such an older phrase. You froze. Are we there? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You're still there. Okay. That left me. This is one of the, I haven't seen a lot. I mean, I thought South Africa, Charlize Theron, I mean, that was it, right? Your actress, your export. Where are you, the next Charlize Thrones? Are you coming over here? Are you taking over? What's happening?
I mean, we are 100%, all four of us.
Okay.
There's so many talented people coming out of South Africa now, and we are infiltrating the world. Mm-hmm. What's Tusa's name? Tusa Mbedu is in Women King. She's like moved over to LA. She's also like a really big deal coming up. And so I think the platform is there and now we're infiltrating. So we're out here.
Yeah. Well, it's good because we could use you in some Star Wars and other. they don't hire American black actors for those parts, so they just so you've got a you're a shoo-in at this point.
You know what? I'm quite jealous of the New Zealanders because Taika Waititi. You know comedy, so must know Taika. The Rabbit and the Wilder People and all those things. So he's done so well now. He's doing the Marvel stuff. You know, he's on that. But in Thor, he's now bringing in so many Australians and Kiwis into those films. Like if you see the latest Thor, there's loads of Australians and Kiwis in there. So he's bringing them in. So our thing would be something like that. Is that we hope that we're the next wave of. Well, Taika, we're coming for you, Taika. What's you?
Are you good? Can you do the American? I feel like everyone can do an American accent and Americans can't do anybody else's accent.
Anybody else. Yeah. No, we can all do pretty decent accent. I need a bit of a warm up. So okay.
All of us will be speaking in American. American.
Yeah.
American for America. American for America.
That's too soon. When you do a play there, do you if you do an American play, do you use American accents?
Yeah.
I mean, we do a lot of work.
A lot of Americans have
a lot of stuff from the UK comes and is shot there. So I think South Africans are.
We have to have an.
Yeah, accent. You have to have the bay. It's pretty important to have. So yeah.
Wait, we try, but there's a lot of.
Fail miserably.
Yeah.
Well, Leonardo DiCaprio did a pretty good South African actor, right?
Every second or third scene.
I mean, we've got one of the most difficult accents in the world to pull off, basically. So, you did okay.
I think Kevin Costner in Robin Hood really sums up how we approach accents in this country. we'll try for a few minutes, but you get the gist. Everyone else has an accent, so we don't need one, right?
It's good in the beginning
to set up the context, and then
it's like the first 5 days of shooting, you shoot out of continuity. So wherever those first 5 days land in the film, those are the accents. The rest of the time, you're just like, I am me.
I've been told this story. I was an actor in college. I did a play called Our Country Is Good, which was about the founding of Australia, the penal colony, right? And I lived in California, so it was much darker then, so people knew I was black. Now I have to explain it because I live in Seattle. So I was playing one of the actors, and I was an actor on there, and I started off with a decent little, it was supposed to be a mix of French and African like accent that also been in Europe or England a little while, then shipped off there. And the critic at the end was just like, yeah, well, and you know, if you had used an accent, that would have been better. And I was like, I thought I was. And I asked my director, do you not hear an accent? He's like, you know, it's faded over time. And I just like, I had one early on, and just by the time we got to performance, apparently I just dropped it and wasn't even aware. So that's how American I am. Very unaware. Man, see, I usually do these questions. There's so many of you. I can't do all seven questions, but I do want to ask. So I want to know what you're most nerdy about, each of you, if I could. Like, what is that thing that you'll collect anything of? Or, you know, like for me, it's I can't tell you how many different Star Wars things are within my grasp right now. Of, you know, I'm a huge Star Wars nerd. I do other things, like some people it's baseball cards or whatever. Like, I want to know what each of you, that little passion, you know, for what are you most nerdy about? John, do you want to start?
I was hoping you were going to.
Okay, I'll go. I don't know if I'm like nerdy, but I've got a thing about collecting magnets, like fridge magnets.
Okay.
So every place that I've ever traveled, or you know, every city that I go to, I have this whole collection of fridge magnets. And I've got tons. I don't know how many, but I've got tons and tons of them. So that's
Did you pick one up in Toronto?
I don't know if it's nerdy. It's cool.
Nerdy doesn't have to be like, you don't have to be a dork from, you know, Alderaan. You can like, you can just be into something hardcore, I think.
No, I love it. I've got a big magnet collection.
that's great. Do you have one from Toronto?
Not yet. We haven't gone super shopping, but I mean, yeah, I have to.
Well. Okay.
It's nerdy, but it's kind of in the world. I collect film posters, so old film posters.
Okay.
And I love gardening, so I don't know. That's really nerdy. I love to garden. Gardening. I love it.
Outdoor? Gardening. Outdoor gardening or indoor?
Outdoor gardening and indoor. My kids hate me. I have plants everywhere in my house. My 20-year-old hates me because I have all these plants in his shower downstairs. He's like, Dad, please with the plants, man. And then when I water them, I put them all at the bottom, and then I put the shower, and then sometimes I forget to put them all back out of the place in the bathroom. So there's like almost 10 plants in his bathroom. And then they're all in the shower. He's like, Dad, can I take your plants out of the shower? Like, yes, boy.
Yeah, COVID turned me into a plant person very much. I have my daughter wants an intervention with me right now, too. So, yeah.
Spray them and have a spray bottle.
Yeah, just they got to grow. They're my babies now. They listen to me.
Yeah, me too. I tell my kids, I say, speak to the plants. And they're like, geez, Dad, please. They hit the leaf. They hit the big leaves. And
I'm like, no.
Touch my plants. Don't bully your brother.
Jock?
I'm not sure if I have a nerdy thing, but I love food. So I love watching videos, yeah. Cooking and watching people eat. It's a thing.
Loving watching people eat and being into food are two different things, I think.
I introduced ASMR, was at the beginning of this year,
yeah.
And he had never known about it before. And I played him a few videos, and he was like, oh my God, like geeking out. He was like, oh my God. Now I'm obsessed with ASMR.
That's hilarious.
I don't know, because I'm not, but I think I am definitely a plant. I have been collecting plants like crazy. Oh. Big, small. I love flowers, and I love plants, and I love orchids. So I recently just moved out of my apartment. Well, been setting it up, but I took a plant, and I was like, I need a plant. I mean, look after my babies. Same.
Okay.
What's my plant?
So I'm holding out for that.
Now, if you love orchids, now you have to promise me this. If you ever come to Seattle, a regular guest on the show, his name is Joseph Greenhour. He is the Orchid King of Seattle. He owns the largest orchid warehouse in Washington. He has a great showroom of all his orchids, very exotic stuff. So if you make it to Seattle, you have to let me take you on a tour of all these orchids. Okay.
I would love that. That would be cool. I'm obsessed with orchids.
It's about the light. It's about where you place it. It's incredible. You can move an orchid around like just in the same room. It doesn't get that right amount of light at that time of the day, and that orchid, and it just won't flower. It's crazy. Right.
If you ever want to cause an insane amount of trouble online, go to an orchid group and suggest putting an ice cube in an orchid. Suggest that, and they will go crazy on you for days because it makes them so mad.
Everyone says that it doesn't work. I think that's why mine aren't flowering because like all of my friends are like, oh, you should put an ice block like once a week.
Imposters.
Yeah. All right, one more. Anything?
I want to hear Jacques. I want to hear Jacques.
I would say like I collect scarves, but my wife will tell you I collect everything.
Look at all these beads that he has. Every time I see him, he's got like 1,000 more beads.
So I suppose my geek is that I collect not throwing things away. It's like, ooh, this is sentimental. Oh, and this is lovely. I remember a great story to this one.
That's
and
cool,
how about
that's cool.
There's a reality TV show that you might be on one day.
I don't like other people doing it. I don't want to watch it. That's totally gross.
Wow. Hey, well, thank you. Thank you so much. Any word? Are you, you're looking for distribution at the festival? Is that what it is right now? Is it going there?
We have Amazon. Amazon have picked us up for Africa, but a part of being in Toronto is obviously seeing if they're going to now do an international release for us. So.
A whole new world.
Yeah. That's copyrighted. We can't do that here. I don't know. Well, I certainly hope. I hope the film gets to the U.S. so more people can see it. It would be lovely here. We're a very cultural, understanding country. So, we have pockets. I think this is definitely. I hope at least it gets to the Seattle Film International Film Festival, which is. I think this would be a darling there. I would think. But hey, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh yeah,
but no. There's a guy from Seattle Film Festival who always comes to DIFF, which is the Durban International Film Festival in South Africa. He always comes and tries to and wants to program South African films. So if he's watching, yeah, please, man, he'll like this film. So,
yeah. Oh, awesome! Yeah, no, it's a great film. Thank you so much for all making it.
Thank you, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Live long and prosper.